the Davis.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Thank you.
What are you?
And thank you, Daryl, for that lovely, lovely music. We really appreciated that. And Daryl's going to be sharing an Easter composition with us during our offertory. He's not going to be here next week on Easter, so he's going to be singing this next week in Tallahassee, and he'll share it with us today during the offertory. So thank you. Okay, so the power of belief. The power of belief. Our global vision for our New Thought churches, both Unity and Centers for Spiritual Living, is to create a world that works, a better world, a world that works for all. And so that has been our theme for 2016, creating a world that works for all. And the theme for March has been realizing the power of mind. So we've been speaking about different aspects of mind. Last week I talked about this rediscovered power of how powerful our mind is and how much it is always at work in our lives. And then today I'm going to speak about the power of belief, and next week the power of mind, again, as it pertains to other aspects of this. So essentially for the whole month of March, we're thinking about our thinking. We're thinking about our thinking. So we have an essay that Ernest Holmes wrote. It's entitled, What We Believe. And in this, every phrase in this composition that he did starts with, we believe, and he states different things that we believe. And the story is that he wrote it in 1927, and that he was asked, just kind of on the spur of the moment, well, what is it that you believe? What is it that you're teaching? So he jotted it down on the back of an envelope in about 15 minutes. But it was so well done and so clear that it has lasted through the years, and it's repeated every month in the Science of Mind magazine and has been for almost 100 years now. So our teaching, our New Thought teaching, and most particularly Religious Science, Science of Mind, Centers for Spiritual Living, whatever you want to call that branch of us, has been considered to be a correlation, a composition, a correlation of the laws of science, the opinions of philosophy, and the revelations of religion. So we bring all of those together to form a system that's applied to human needs and the aspirations of people. So, in other words, we're all about combining all of the best that life has to offer in terms of religion, science, and philosophy into a way of life that we live every day. It's not just something that we come in and talk about on Sunday for a little bit. What we incorporate into our lives, and we live it every day of our lives. So, starting with revelations of religion, along the line of beliefs, if we were to look in the Bible and find out how many references have been made to belief or believe, in the King James Version there are 143 instances when it's spoken of. So it's obviously a very important part of our Christian teachings. And some of the verses that are more popular that we've probably all been familiar with is, it's done unto you as you believe. And everything is possible to him who believes. And I believe, help thou my unbelief. And now when we look at the philosophy, philosophers, especially the classical philosophers, have spoken about belief in many ways, about the power of the mind. Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. And Plato said, know thyself. And René Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. So philosophy also emphasizes the importance of the mind and what we believe and what we think about. So, but some of the most interesting information to me has been the information that's been brought forth by our scientists. So that's what I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this morning, is information that the scientists have brought forth that can affect our lives. So we live in a spiritual universe. Everything is spirit. And so this energy of spirit pervades everything. So everything that we see in the physical world is an outpicturing of what is in the inner world of spirit or energy. So in order to change what we're seeing in the outer, we have to go back to first cause and change what is behind that effect. So that's our thought energy. Our thought energy is behind every effect in the outer. So the question that we could be asking ourselves is, what do I want to experience? What do I want to see in the world? How do I want to live so that I can experience and see what I hold in my heart? So in the new sciences that we now have that are being taught and demonstrated in different ways, scientists have begun to take not only the physical laws that they've been aware of, but they've been incorporating it with the higher dynamic of the energy of thought and consciousness, bringing forth new understandings about the physical laws. So in quantum physics, which has been the newer line of physics that has been introduced since Newtonian physics, we have scientists saying the observer affects the reality. So that's very much so pointing to consciousness, that what we're thinking, what we're intending, where we're focused is playing out in the outer experience that we're having. So another area is new biology. There's an author and a scientist by the name of Bruce Lipton, and he's written a book called The Biology of Belief, The Biology of Belief. And in this study, he shows that our genetics are not what is determining the health of our body. That's just one small factor, and that can change. That what determines our health is not our genetics, but our consciousness, what we're believing, what we're doing with our beliefs. And so this is a whole new take on the older biology that said everything was encoded in our DNA and it's just there, it can't be changed. That's not true. This new biology is showing. We can make a difference. We can change our genetics. We can change the very structure of our DNA through changing our thinking, changing our consciousness. So here's a quote from Bruce Lipton. He said, "You can live a life of fear or live a life of love. You have the choice. But I can tell you that if you choose to see a world full of love, your body will respond by growing in health. If you choose to believe that you live in a dark world full of fear, your body's health will be compromised as you psychologically close down in a protective response." So that is from his book, The Biology of Belief. So just as there is new physics and new biology, so there is new religion. And that's what we are in new thought. We are a new thought approach to the basics of religion. Not that we are pushing anything out, but we're adding a new dimension, a new understanding of it, so that we can use these laws in a more conscious way, knowing that we can affect what's going on in our lives. So that's what we teach here at the Spiritual Enrichment Center. And that new thought is supported by both Unity and the Centers for Spiritual Living teachings. In the Science of Mind textbook, it says, "In mental work, we must realize that there is one infinite mind which is consciously directing our destiny. Declare there is one supreme intelligence which governs, guides, and guards, tells me what to do, when to act, and how to act. And having done this in perfect faith, then we act with perfect assurance." So we're tuned into this through our consciousness, through our conscious awareness of it, through our realization of it, through the times that we go within and listen to that guidance and direction. That's what enables it to work powerfully and for good in our life experiences. So here's the place that I'd like to comment for just a moment on the difference between what you think and what you believe and what you have faith in. Those are three different things, and they're not all the same, although sometimes we use them interspersed like that. So when you have faith in something, you absolutely know it. It's embodied in you. You absolutely know that that is true. I mean, you could take that to the bank. That's how sure of you are that you are of it. So faith is from the heart. Faith is an attitude of the heart. Now, belief is what you think. That's what, if you believe, that's from the thought. I believe that to be true. But when you have faith, then you know it to be true. Now, it often feels like we don't know how to change what we believe and what we have faith in. But where we do have conscious authority is through our thinking. Our thinking, that what we dwell on in our thought becomes what we believe, and what we believe and dwell on becomes what we have faith in. So where we have control is at the level of thought. So that's where we can stand watch guard over our thinking to make sure that we're only dwelling on things that we want to have manifest out into the world. So that puts a big responsibility on us. But let me reassure you that there are thoughts that just go fleeting by. You're not going to be able to stop all that, but you don't have to invite them in and give them a place to roost. You can just turn them out. You can say, no, that's not what I want to focus on. So don't feel guilty and bad if you have thoughts that flitter through your mind. Heavens, we live in a human world, and there's always the temptation to think in a negative way about any situation whatsoever. So just remember, what you want to focus on is what you're going to develop into your system of beliefs, and then it's going to develop in your system of faith, what you have faith in. So we start with our thinking, and that builds up our beliefs, and that builds up our faith. In New Thought, we say, change your thinking, change your life. And that is true, but there's another little piece of it that I haven't always dwelled on that I'd like to tell you about. It's, and keep it changed. And keep it changed. You don't just change it once. It's not just a one-time thing. Oh, I changed that thought. But then you went back to the other thought, and that was what you entertained and dwelled on and grew in your belief system. So you have to change your thinking and keep it changed. That's what we do with our spiritual work, with our classes, with our meditation time, with our spiritual readings, with our affirmative prayer or spiritual mind treatment. We're practicing keeping our thought changed so that we're forming a new road, a new inroad. It's like, I like to think about the, you know, I live out in the farm country, and you see these cows that are going out to the salt block, and they go back and forth and back and forth, and they make a rut. They make a rut. Well, that's the same thing with our thinking. When we keep going back and forth over the same old thoughts, we just make a deeper and deeper rut. We have to step out of it and allow ourselves to make a new pathway in our conscious thinking. So in addition to the work of Bruce Lipton, who is a wonderful cellular biologist with this new biology, there's another social scientist that I've enjoyed and that many of you may be familiar with. His name is Joseph Chilton Pierce. How many have heard about Joseph Chilton Pierce? Some of you have. Okay, great. Well, he has been writing and studying for about 70 years now. He's 90 years old. I just saw an interview with him recently, and he's in the process of writing another book. It's about his 12th book, and he still has much to say on the subject of how the mind works. He wrote a book, you may have heard of, The Magical Child. That would be one that we would enjoy, Melanie, with our work with children. He also wrote The Crack in the Cosmic Egg. That was probably his most famous book. Well, he's got some other books. He's got one called The Biology of Transcendence. And in this Biology of Transcendence, he explains that we actually are composed of five different brains, five different levels of brains. Now, the first brain, and it's kind of interesting how it coincides with our development as evolved human people, evolved human beings. The first brain that he reminds us that we have is called the reptilian brain. That's the brain that's at the base of our brain stem, and it develops during the first trimester of gestation. So that's the brain that has to do with just survival. That's just our survival brain, wanting to breathe, eat, those kinds of things. The second level that's developed in the second trimester is the mammalian brain, the brain that's involved with emotion, with motivation. And then the third brain is the, let me get these names right, just a second. The third brain is developed in the third trimester, and it gives us our language, our perception, our planning, our abstraction. It's a little more developed. Now, the fourth brain, the fourth level of the brain, doesn't develop until after we're born, and it's in the prefrontal lobe. You might notice if you ever look at some of your baby pictures or baby pictures of children, sometimes this area looks a little bit bigger than it does later in life. That's where that area is developing, that prefrontal lobe is developing. And so, and the fifth brain that Pierce defines is the heart. Did you know that they're showing that the heart has brain cells? The heart has brain cells. It actually is a cognizant part of us. So that develops later as we continue evolving and growing in our development. So as we develop, we think not just with our intellect, not just with our survival skills, but with our heart. We develop the compassionate heart. Jerry was telling us her necklace is the eye of compassion. Is that a Buddhist symbol? Or just a symbol, just a general symbol. So as we develop along the lines, we develop our heart. So our heart becomes the compassionate heart. And when we're clicking on all five cylinders, then we're fully functioning beings who are moving into that development of the Christ consciousness, which is the highest expression that we are aware of on this plane. That's what Jesus demonstrated, was the Christ consciousness working with all areas. Mahatma Gandhi said that when you, what you think and what you say and what you do are all the same, you're fully functioning. So that's where we're going, using all of that together. So here's a quote from Joseph Chilton Pierce. We can operate within a new form of science that asks not just what is possible, but what is appropriate. Appropriate to the well-being of self and earth. Such a question does not originate in the mental realm, but in the spiritual. It's felt bodily once our senses and heart are attuned. So the central part of our being that simply must be allowed to function and be attended to is the heart. That's from his book entitled Heart-Mind Matrix, How the Heart Can Teach the Mind New Ways to Think. I love that title. I love that subtitle. So it's with our heart that we learn to think in terms of compassion and inclusion. And it's with our heart that we begin to create that world that works for everyone. Logically, if we're just using our brain in the different variations of that, we could see a lot to be afraid of in the world. But as we transcend that and we look with a broader view, we see that everything is possible. If we just believe it and know it, focus on it, we can bring it into being. So the heart is the very center of our belief system. The heart is the most evolved system of thought. The most evolved system of thought. Now, these various brains that we develop don't negate the former brain, it includes and encompasses us. Pierce said, nature never abandons a system that works, but instead builds new, enlarged, and more efficient systems upon the old. Nature seems to have created each new evolutionary brain to correct problems in an older system or to expand its possibilities. So our heart is an expanded possibility of our lives. So they need to work together in order for us to be at our highest potential. We have to use our logic as well as our heart. We have to use our brains as well as our compassion in order to develop this world that works. So that's how what we think, say, and do all work together to create a world that works for all of us. Now, it's interesting because these levels of brain development also correspond with spiritual development. And there's a new spiritual science called integral philosophy, integral spirituality, that Ken Wilber is doing a lot of research in. And he explains how we're in an evolutionary process of spirituality. Now, you can see how it kind of coincides with the development of the heart and the brain system. He says the first system is when we're concerned only with our survival, just our survival and our little tight group of people just around us, our family, and we're willing to fight and keep anybody out that interferes with our own family's well-being. So this is the most basic level of spirituality. The next level is when we expand that a little bit and we include our little community, whoever looks like us, whoever thinks like us, whoever is in our mode of experience. That's the next level. So we can see how that kind of coincides with the way the brain is developing. And then the next level of spirituality includes perhaps our whole country. Maybe we become nationalistic and we think our whole country is worth defending and fighting against. And then the next level is when we include the whole world. We become global thinkers. But there's more. But wait, there's more. The next level is when we look beyond what the eye and the mind can perceive into what the heart knows is true. That's that level of transcendence. And this is what all the mystics have seen, is that level of transcendence, how everything is connected. Even if we can't really understand every minute with the brain, we can feel with the heart that there's just one heart. There's only one heart. We each have different aspects of it beating within us, but there's the global heart, the global brain. So this level of transcendence is one that the mystics have gotten to. And if you study the various mystics from various traditions, you'll see they're all saying the same thing. They've seen that oneness. And they're working from that level of the heart, that highest level of functioning. And so most people who believe in God say they also believe in prayer. But our idea of prayer changes as our idea of God changes and expands. In the rudimentary levels of prayer, we're thinking that God is something bad out there that will condemn us if we don't look out. And so we have to offer sacrifices. That was what the earlier people did. They offered sacrifices, or they thought they had to adhere to certain creeds or dogmas, that they were sure to get punished if they didn't do it exactly right. And then as we expand, our idea of prayer expands until finally we realize that we are one with all that is. We are one with each other. And as we see that and we look from that perspective of oneness, that we reach out and affect and help all people everywhere. That what hurts one person, as Paul beautifully expressed to us the other night, Paul, I'm going to pick on you for a minute, as he beautifully expressed, that when someone else is hurting, it affects us too. We should see that as we're all connected, and what affects one part of life is affecting all parts of life. So it's natural for each of us to think that the way we pray is the correct way. But you know what? It all depends on where the person is thinking and what they're believing. So any prayer that's effective is working with universal laws. So we have to acknowledge that everybody is working in their own realm of understanding and experience, their own understanding of the laws, and their prayer is just as valid as anyone else's. No matter what language it's spoken in, it's all based on that belief within us that comes forth. So if God ever answered prayers, God always answers prayers, because the law is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So if there seems to be any failure on the part of that law to work, it's based on our ignorance and our misunderstanding of the will and the nature of God, just like our reading today stated. We have to expand our understanding of God's will for us, which is all good. The will for our own personal lives, the will for our world, it's all good. Now, we're dealing with a lot of outside conditions in the world today. And perhaps we're more aware of it than people used to be, because now we have the internet. We have instant, immediate communication with people. And we can see these various levels of brain functioning being demonstrated in our, especially in our political arena. And it's brought to light that there are many, many scared people in our country. Many, many scared people in our country who are acting out of fear. They're acting out of fear, and at times it looks very ugly. But what I believe and I know within me is that it's good, because it's bringing to the light things that have been pushed down in consciousness, are issues of racism, nationalism, anger, greed. People who have purported to be public servants have been sometimes motivated by greed and self-serving. So all this is coming to the light. It's coming up so that we have to look at it and see it. And this is good. As long as something's hidden and covered over, people can deny it. Oh, no, I'm not like that. I'm not like that. But when something brings it right to the surface, people who call themselves good and Christian people have to look at what they're espousing. What are they saying? What are they talking about? What are they believing in? So I think that we're in a time of great upheaval and that it's all leading toward greater good. So when you observe things, instead of getting upset about it, instead of thinking, oh, why is this happening? If you can remember that we're in a healing time, that we're in the evolution of consciousness, and that people are raising their consciousness to a higher understanding, and then you can bless from a place within you, a place of peace within you, and know that everybody is doing the best they can. And if some people are acting out of fear, then you can spread love, you can spread understanding and compassion to those dark pockets and bring light into those dark pockets. So some things that we can remind ourselves of is that competition is not the answer. Cooperation is the answer. That's what makes it work, cooperation. There is enough for everybody in this world. There is no limit. There is no shortage of anything. We used to say, well, there's plenty of food. It's stored in big bins, and it's going bad at times, but we don't have any way to get it to them. Well, that's not true. We have plenty of ways to get it to them. There's plenty of ways to spread all of the resources so that everyone has an abundance. Buckminster Fuller had some statistics about that at one time, and I'm not sure if I'm remembering it correctly, but I think he said that if we distributed the wealth of the planet around, now of course we have to take in fact consciousness, and people who might be given a lot might not have the consciousness to sustain it, but there is enough for everyone on the whole planet to be prosperous. We just have to continue to educate and raise that awareness. So we are our brother's keeper because we are all connected. And anything less than that just continues to perpetuate a world of war, of strife, of suffering and pain. We can find a way, and I believe in us. I believe in all of us. I believe that just makes sense that we're moving to the next logical level of dealing with things that are before us on the planet, and that we are doing it, we can do it, and we will do it. So we can do our part by keeping our mind focused on that presence and power that is working in every situation, even the ones that it's hard to see it in. So we don't exist in this world for the purpose of making our mark on the world. You know, some people think, oh, I'm going to be famous. I want to make my mark on the world. I want people to remember me. I'm going to collect a whole bunch of toys and a whole pile of money so that I'll be remembered after I die. That's not what it's about at all. Ernest Holmes said that we do not exist to make an impression upon the universe. We exist to express ourselves in and through our environment. We are here for expression. Expression of who we are. We are expressions of a creative energy of life that has created us all with the same heart beating in different bodies. And what we do or allow to be done to anyone affects all of us. So the power of mind is the nature of God. Since each of us has the power of mind readily available to us, then we're all included in the nature of God. We are all co-creators. So we create, and we use that power of mind to create through our thinking, through our beliefs, through our faith. And then we're able to remake our lives and remake our worlds world into a place that works for everyone. It's a beautiful world when we believe with our hearts. So I have an affirmation that I'd like to share with you. We believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of life to all. Let's say this together. We believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of life to all. And so it is. Namaste. Thank you. Okay, let's close with prayer.